This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, which offers education and training for football referees of all levels. You can now listen to our weekly podcast every Friday from 5pm by subscribing to the website or by searching Spotify and Apple Podcasts. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is Southwestern Pool. What's the rest of it, Rich? I've forgotten now.
Oh, there's a lot of words and lots of whatever.
He does something. He does something with the observing in the Southwestern Pool. So, yeah. Okay, we got that bit out of the way. We're going to crack on with our guest for the third episode in a row. Former Premier League referee Lee Probert is with us. Hello again, Lee. All right?
Hi, Darren. I'm getting a regular on
here. Yeah, you are, aren't you? And obviously, if you've listened to the podcast over years gone by, you'll know that Lee and Rich are very good mates. And we've been waiting for a long time to get hold of Lee to talk about this particular episode. Rich, over to you.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover in this episode because we've talked about firsts in other episodes. And like I say, for me, it's just about recognising what my mate did. And I was one of those unfortunate referees that came into the game too late to make an impact. OK, I got to the National List assistant referees and that, but my career didn't take off early enough as a referee because I waited until I was nearly, well, just gone 30 before I took the referee's exam. But Lee came on the scene and it was a strange way to watch somebody else do what those things that I wanted to do. And he did them even better than I thought I could do them, if that's possible.
Rich, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Were you ever jealous of Lee?
No, never. Never. I mean, there was a time when we used to do training together when I thought, okay, this young whippersnapper, let's see what he's got in the toolbox and let's see if I can, you know, I can push him, like, you know, because I knew where my strengths were in training. And we went out training one day and I thought, okay, let's just push on a bit, push harder, you know, work. And this guy was
whooped your ass.
He was still a yard in front of me, and I thought, this ain't normal. Brilliant. I don't normally accept that, but that's how it was.
Excellent.
He was always a yard in front of me, and I think he always knew where I was. Purposely, he kept me there, like, you know. But no, never jealous, never ever jealous. Just envious that I never had half a chance to do what Lee's done, and so proud of what he's done, like, you know.
Excellent. Okay, so let's move on with, let's start with the Champions League, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd have said to me in 2010 that I would be a FIFA referee, I'd have snapped your hand off. Pre that, I was quite lucky, other than having Rich. Steve Bennett was my mentor on when I got onto the Premier League. And Steve, like we've always said, did the basics and did the basics well. And I was lucky enough to have Steve as a mentor. And then, of course, 2010, become a FIFA referee, which then allows you to represent the FA and wear the FIFA badge. And like you say, go to different places around Europe representing the Football Association, which was an absolute honour. Refereed some Europa League games, refereed some Champions League games, some Euro qualifiers, been to some places I've never even heard of, and just had a wonderful time as a FIFA and Premier League, Premiership referee.
Lee, can you remember your first Champions League game, your overseas game as a FIFA referee?
Where did you go? I can't, Rich, because and that's probably quite bad, really, because I should have. I remember my first tournament, because you go to a tournament first. You go to a youth tournament, and Steve Child got on the same time as me as an assistant referee. So Steve and I went to Venlo in Holland.
Oh yeah,
And I don't know what it was, but we seemed to have all the tournaments. We had seemed to have all the toughest groups. So we had Germany, Holland, Poland, and I think Austria may have been. So consequently, we all end refereeing games, and of course, the biggest game of the tournament was Germany-Holland, which Steve and I were lucky enough to be given the opportunity to me to ref it, Steve to be assistant referee, and I think we had another guy from, I think it was Greece, on the far side. So that's my real first one. But then games came thick and fast, as you can imagine. Tuesday, Champions League. Thursday, Europa League. Premier League, Premiership. Saturdays, games just were thick and fast.
What did you find when you first got the call to the FIFA list and you went out doing Euro competitions? What was the first and foremost thing that you remember, the difference between the cultures of football in the UK and overseas?
There's a massive difference in European football, and you see that when you watch games from around the world. They referee any time they go to ground or the foot comes up, nine times out of ten they give a free kick. But a lot of the European teams liked English referees refereeing their games because they allowed a little bit more physical contact. Not too much, because at the end of the day, too much physical contact in Europe became sort of more problems. The more you let the game go, you were never getting it back. So it was a case of knowing how to let the game flow, but also keeping it well under control by giving those little free kicks, those simple free kicks that didn't escalate into something a lot bigger, which we all know can do. Because if you let the first one go, you let the second one go, before you know, someone somewhere is going to stop somebody from doing something and it ends up being a sanction. And if you think, if only if I'd have stopped the first little one, maybe the next ones wouldn't have happened. So there is a different culture in refereeing abroad.
Yeah. And what about the communication? There's a perception that we don't understand European football. I know that's not true, but I just want our listeners to hear it from yourself.
No, definitely not, because wherever we went in Europe, and we are still welcomed with open arms to referee football games in Europe, people enjoy us refereeing because we're seen as a Premier League as being the best league in the world. And when our match officials turn up to those games, wherever they are in Europe, people know them already, because it doesn't matter where you go in Europe, people already know who you are and where you referee.
That's cool. Right. Okay. Let's get into a Champions League game. I remember you doing a game, and I'll be the name dropper on this occasion. I can't remember if it was Dortmund at home or Real Madrid at home, but those were the two teams involved.
I was quite lucky because as well as refereeing, we got involved in being assistant referees behind the goal. additional assistant referees behind the goal. And I was on one of the early stages of that. And there's a little story there. One of my first ever game going abroad. I think we were going to PSV. I was going to Villarreal with Mike Dean. We met, yeah. All excited, got on my kit packed. Left in the morning, plenty of time to get to Heathrow. Got into the hotel, parked my car, met the other additional assistant referee, and went, I've forgotten my passport.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
And Darren, let me tell you, that was my one time when I'm thinking, right, I'm now an international official. I'm going as an additional assistant referee to Villarreal, and I am now on my way back to Wiltshire to pick up my passport. It is on the kitchen table, which I can see it clearly. I made the phone call to the Football Association, sort of, hello, I've got a bit of a problem. Didn't go down very well.
I was going to say, how did you get yourself around that one? Did you lie or did you tell them the truth?
I just came straight out and said, look, I'm really, really sorry. I've left in a hurry. I have left my passport on the kitchen table. And I knew exactly where it was. The thing is, my neighbour had a key to our house. So I rang him and said, I need your help. He said, oh, what's the matter there? I said, can you go into my house, pick up my passport, and can you meet me halfway along the M4? Because I need to get back because there's a flight leaving. I think we're on the 8 o'clock flight going out, and I need to get on that 2 o'clock flight. So, and the trouble is, because all the flights were all booked by UEFA and everybody there, it's such a pain for just me or anybody breaking down the teamwork, because the team had all gone. Having forgot your passport, then you've got to rearrange flights, and then you've got to try and get from the airport to the hotel where they're staying, and then all the boys are out having their dinner. I rock up at some ridiculous time in Villarreal with my tail between my legs, thinking I will never ever go unprepared again. And it's the first thing now, if I ever go abroad now, it's passport. And like you say, we've all done things that when you look back, you remember, and it's again making sure your preparation, you check, and you check again. A massive learning curve. So yeah, that was my first story of my
brilliant story.
Do you want to tell the story about behind the goal line? And I think Mike Dean might have been the referee when you got pelted.
That was at PSV. I remember it clear as day. Mike Dean's refereeing. Now they've got nets behind me. Full house at PSV. The balls, and what you've got to realise is now, when you're so used to refereeing, you're following play.
Yeah.
All of a sudden now, play is coming towards you, which is something completely alien to me, because normally you move with play, and then when something, you're stood and play is coming towards you, you're thinking, right, okay, it's a completely different mindset. So I remember Mike Dean, we're all mic'd up, there's six of us on the pitch, ball comes in, Mike Dean hits the whistle, penalty. And I'm thinking, that's outside the box. And the trouble was, when I stood on the goal line, the perception of the pitch looks completely different, because I'm looking at it from a completely different angle, one I'm never used to looking at. And I'm thinking, that's outside the box. I've got to tell him. So Mike set in all the things. I said, Mike, I need to speak to you, because I'm telling you now, 100% that challenge is outside the box. Well, you can imagine Mike Dean, he's got a bit of a personality. The communication between Mike and I was, I hope you're right, along those lines. thinking, so do I. So he takes the ball off a spot, he puts the ball outside the box, and I'm still thinking, come on. Well, by that time, PSV have now got a penalty given to them, now taken away from them.
Ooh, ouch.
Outside the box, and you've got a few of the local fans wanting to let them know, or let the additional referee know, that they're not particularly very happy. All I can say is, a good job we had netting behind, because I think the amount of coins and lighters and everything that came up, you name it, it came over towards that netting. Thankfully, the netting worked and nothing got onto the pitch. But it was one of them where you're thinking to yourself, Please get it right. I can hear Dino's words going, Probes, I hope you got that right. And cut a long story short, we had a debrief afterwards, and the videos come in, and thankfully it was a call that was correct. Mike got a fantastic mark out of it, and we were in the hat for the next round, which was all we ever talked about, was as a team, wherever you were, whatever team you're in, it was always making sure you put performance in, that you got another game in the next round of the Europa League or Champions League.
And I bet you never sweated so much as you did until that final whistle blew.
Darren, I can assure you, my palpitations was like, my heart was beating, thinking, oh, come on. And you know when you know it's right, but you've got to try and convince the whole of the stadium and everyone else on the pitch that it's outside the box. And when you're the only person that knows that, you think, okay. So, yeah, you're right. It was sweating profusely.
And, of course, when you award a decision, doesn't matter at what level you're playing in, you then start questioning yourself, don't you? You think, actually, was that right? Was that definitely right? And I've done that before, and I've actually distracted myself from the game as it continued, because I was still thinking about the decision that I gave, which whether or not it should have been right or wrong. So to be in that situation must have been a real head mess for you.
But you mentioned something there, Darren, is that you've got to give a decision, then you've got to move on from it. And we were lucky that in our Zoom meeting we had pre-St George's Park, we were lucky enough to have a sports psychologist that works for UEFA and FIFA, Mika van der Poole from Switzerland. And she spoke about how to move on from a decision that you've given, rightly or wrongly, park it and leave it and get on to the next decision, because your next decision could be even bigger than the one you've just given.
It is true. I mean, that's the skill sets of trying to park a decision. And that's important for all our listeners to understand that you will make an error of judgment somewhere along the line, but it's being able to focus ready for the next decision without thinking about the last decision. And that takes a lot of learning and a lot of patience to develop.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon, and our guest is Lee Prober. My feeling is, so far, we're probably not going to get this one done in the 20-minute time frame. So this one might be a little bit longer because we now have to move on to the FA Cup final. Lee, for those that can't remember, what year was the FA Cup final call?
2014.
OK. So tell us about the moment.
17th of May, 5:30 kickoff, just in case you're struggling.
One of those memorable days in your lifestyle and career. So let's start at the very beginning on this one, Lee. The moment that you got the call, did you have any ideas that it might come, or was it just like completely out of the blue, or how did it go?
No, I mean, 2014, Rich has already mentioned, was a really good year for me. Everything that I was refereeing seemed to go rather well. I refereed the North East Derby, Sunderland against Newcastle. I was appearing on a lot of Sky TV games. So it was, and then of course, being involved in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund, things were going well. And I'll say they're going well because there was games coming thick and fast. So people said to me, oh, what do you think? I said, look, at the end of the day, all I can do, and this is all I ever say to people, is put a performance in each week and then let other people make the decisions for you. So if you keep banging performances in, who knows what you're going to get. So the more you put in. So it got to Christmas and I picked up the Brighton-Newcastle replay at Brighton, which I think they went on and won. And then you always know that, well, we always knew that the quarterfinals, normally the match officials come from the quarterfinals. So you can imagine now that I'm hoping that I'm not involved in the quarterfinals, because if it is going to be my year, I didn't know, but if it was going to be my year, I didn't want to be in the quarterfinals, because that means I didn't get a quarterfinal game. And I'm thinking, okay, that's pretty good. Knowing my luck, I'll get a semi-final. Semi-finals come and went, and I wasn't involved. So I never did a game after the replay. We went to St George's Park and everyone's talking about who's going to do the cup final. What do you reckon, Lee? I said, listen, I don't know. And I never took anything for granted. All I ever did is I went to work, did what I had to do, and I went home. And I left St George's Park driving home, and the phone went. I'm in my car, phone, I was hands free at the time. And it was Peter Ellsworth. So I thought, oh, okay, must be a game coming up. Click the button, and I remember Peter saying, hello, is that the 2014 FA Cup final referee? And it was like, that was how I was. That pause then was not deliberate. That was exactly how I was. And I said, Peter, are you telling me the truth? Yeah, yeah. He said, on behalf of the Football Association, I would like to congratulate you on your appointment to referee in the FA Cup final 2014. I'll tell you who your team are once I've got in touch with everybody. But you can't tell anybody. This has got to stay between you and I. And quite constantly, I'm driving down the A38 and I have got no recognition of getting home, really, from St George's Park. Because
you're on the phone telling everybody.
Yeah, well, the thing was, when I got it, the first place I looked for is the sky, just to tell my dad that I'd got the cup final, because sadly, I lost my dad in 2007, and my biggest regret is that he never watched me referee a Premier League game. He was there for every game through thick and thin, but never quite saw the Premiership games or the finals. So it was a case of I looked there, and then I thought, right, well, I've got to ring Mel, because she's got to get a new dress. So I phoned after Peter had told me. As much as I can't tell anyone, I rang Mel and said, Mel, just to let you know, we're going to Wembley in May, so you might want to get yourself something new. So she said, I've got to go to football. I said, yeah. She said, I'll never go to football. I said, well, this one's a little bit different. You've been invited to this one, so you'll be coming.
She said, I'm getting my nails done that day.
to be honest, Darren, that was wasted on Mel, because all she ever knew that I used to go to work and run around football pitch and come home. So she's like, I don't go to football, Lee. I said, yeah, I know, but you need to come to this one. So, and I thought, well, I've got to ring my mum. So consequently, I rang him. I said, right, Mum, you need to tell me, swear to secrecy. Don't go and tell everybody. Don't tell anybody that this is what's happening. So, no, I won't. And then she must have phoned me about three times. Like, I haven't told anybody. Great. And then I thought, well, I better tell me mate. And I don't know who's more made up, me or him. He was up. So, yeah, I mean, it was probably the best feeling ever. Other than my wedding, of course. I've got to chuck that one in just
I was going to say, yeah, get that one in there, mate. God.
Listen, I've got to cover every base. That was probably driving over St. George. And the worst bit was I wanted to tell you know when you want to tell people what you're doing, and I couldn't.
Bursting at the seams, mate, I think is the phrase that I would use.
Yeah, it was. So I said to Mel, I got home. I said, come on, we're going to go 9 hours of golf. She went, what? I said, I just need to get out of the house. I said, I need to be away from everybody. I said, I'm going to have a phone call in a little while from the FA. I'm going to do a little piece about what it's like. I said, so we ended up going playing, well, I say playing golf. I walked around 9 holes because I just couldn't hit a golf ball because my mind was everywhere else other than trying to concentrate on hitting a little white ball around. And it was just probably surreal for that first few days where I couldn't tell anybody.
I was hanging on to the chandeliers for 3 or 4 days until it all came out. And I mean, it was fantastic. And like I say, have I ever been jealous of Lee? Never. And like I say, that's how we shared things in that type of environment, because he came on to me in terms of, Rich, whatever I tell you now, you cannot tell anybody. And I didn't. And until it was official that the FA Cup final referee 2014 was Lee William Probert, and that was it. Like, you know, just amazing, amazing, amazing. And like I say, I never refereed it physically, but my word, I was all over the place.
I was going to say,
like,
I bet you were.
I was all over the place. The things we were when we were in those early days and Lee was going towards the Football League, I would go with him to every game that he refereed. Barnet, Hereford, Telford, Southport, you name it. We done all the grounds, non-league grounds, just outside the Football League. When he got to Football League, I eased up and didn't go to so many games because he was going so well. I thought, I can't go along, because if I go along and he has one of those decisions that everybody gets beaten up for, I don't want to be there because I'll be the bad omen. Mm. So I never went to many Football League games. I went to a few Premier League games. I remember going to Wigan, Stoke, Chelsea, Liverpool, some big games, big teams. They were real hype things. I reduced my going to watch Lee at games because I wanted him to stay in the zone, in that good. He was in that good zone of top refereeing, and that's all I can say. Okay, there are other top referees in the group. I fully admit that. But when my mate was in there and he was refereeing out of his skin week in, week out, I just thought, how do you do that? How do you do that? I can watch him. I can tell him what it looks like, but I never lived the practical side of it on match day, which I don't regret, because I did it for the reason of I don't want to be a jinx. And that's just how it all works. It was such a fantastic time. And going to the cup final, I mean,
Lee, let's talk about the day itself. Start from the beginning. When your alarm went off. Did you sleep the night before?
We left here on a Friday. I mean, the car was packed. Mel's got half a dozen outfits, I think. I spoke to the team and said, look, we're going to go in suits, going to go grey trousers, white shirt, blah, blah, blah. And I remember Mick Madonna saying to me, what, I've got to buy new gear? I said, yeah, you've got to buy new gear, Mick. And I said, Mick, get yourself a nice white shirt. We're going to get, going to go for a blazer. We're not going to go in suits, we're going to blazer. And what? So Mick couldn't get to grips with it. He had to spend a bit of money on a blazer and trousers and stuff. But we agreed that we were all going to go there. I, as people know, dedicated the cup final to my dad. So I asked Nike if they would stitch my dad's name into my boots, which they did, which I've still kept. I've only worn them once, and now they're kept in there. So my dad's name stitched into my boots. Not something that I want, that I would say I wanted every time, and I don't think I would need my name on them. I just wanted something that my dad could be on that pitch with me, despite he probably looking down. I just wanted him to be on the pitch. So so we left on Friday. We got to Hendon Hall, as it was then. We went to Wembley because we all believe that you've got to get the bits out early. So you've got to go and see it. You've got to go and, all right, I was lucky enough to go to Wembley a few times along with Jake and along with Mick and Kevin Friend. We'd all been to Wembley before, but it's a case of this is the FA Cup final. We're going to go, we're going to get all the pictures, we're going to hold the trophy, we're going to have a look around, just make sure that we're comfortable with everything. Then, of course, we come back to the hotel, we sign what seems to be forever, either final rally programmes, programmes we've signed, and then we again go off to the either final rally where we're lucky enough to sit in front of everybody that comes and just tells our story, really, and how delighted we are to get the final, and what an honour it is to be able to walk out of Wembley on the big. I still believe the FA Cup is as good as it ever is. I mean, there's nothing better than growing up watching the FA Cup. And I mean, I did it as my mate rung me on day. He says, "What do you mean you got the FA Cup finally? What, we're not going to go down the park and put our two jumpers down and remiss and revisit the game like I did as a kid?" I mean, just the things that you did as a kid watching the FA Cup final, now you're doing it on the day. So that was the Friday. Saturday night, the Friday night was okay. So we finished the either final rally. And all I wanted to do was get back to the hotel. I just wanted to get back to the hotel, get back into my room and just try and settle down. Just because there was so much going on, people wanting this. And as much as I enjoyed all that, people that know me will know that I just want to just go in, do my job, keep my head down, stay under the radar. That's how I always would be, and that's how I want to go about. So I just wanted to get back, get my head down. So we got up in the morning, had breakfast, and then we had a massage in the morning, or the masseur turns up and said, "Did you want anyone man the massage?" I didn't really. I just thought, no, come on, just make sure you focus. We all had breakfast together. All the girls then had their breakfast later on. And then it was a case of, right, okay, this is how we're going to go about it. This is what we're going to do. We had a game plan. We all set a game plan out of how the game wanted to pan out. I just wanted to just keep everything simple, let the players do what they needed to do without getting involved too early. And just see how it panned out. I never ever saw Hull City taking a 2-goal lead because I expected Arsenal just to keep the ball like they did back then, keep the ball, play, hit you on a break, bang, goal, who knows. But at 2-0, it was like, hang on a minute, all our game plans changed after 1-0. It was like down the earpiece saying, right, lads, we just need to buckle down now because Arsenal are going to want to try and get the ball back. They want to try and dominate the game. And then it went 2-0, of course, and it was like, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen now? So for all those Arsenal fans that are sitting there watching it and thinking 2-0 down, who knows? And then, of course, the game finishes 2-2. And what you don't need on the cup final is an extra 30 minutes. And then we got through the extra 30 minutes. And like you say, Ramsey scores the winner. Arsenal win 3-2. I then go up and get my medal and experience probably one of the best days that I've ever experienced as a match referee in the 2014 FA Cup final.
Lee, I need to ask you about what it's like to be in the centre circle at the start of an FA Cup final. Is it absolutely deafening or what is your focus at that point? What's going through your head?
Well, it sounds daft, all right? This sounds really, really daft because it's the FA Cup final. But we all said as a team that it is no different to what we do week in, week out. We've got to just go with the same mindset. You talk about superstitions. It's not superstitions. It's a routine. It's what you do week in, week out. And whilst it's working for you, you keep doing it. And I stood in the middle. We walked out. I was lucky enough to meet royalty across the red carpet. And then I, of course, once the national anthem started, then I was like thinking that this is not normal. So I had to quickly phase that one out and get out of it. But soon as you get into, and Rich will tell you, there's like a switch and all referees have got it. You go into like a match mode, and it's go right. Okay, we now need to switch on. So at probably 3 o'clock or 5:30, as it was, it was an amazing feeling to a look round to see the whole stadium full, and I mean Wembley was full. And all I said to the lads, as soon as the whistle went, I said, boys, are you ready? Let's just make sure everything runs smoothly. Good luck. And then just away we go.
Wow. What an experience of a lifetime. Incredible.
Lee, did the occasion in terms of worldwide and the millions and millions of people around the world, did you ever think on that moment or did you just stay in the zone?
No, I think because we were so focused on as a team and delivering a performance that we, the last thing you want to be doing is remembered for a game, whatever game it is, for getting a big decision wrong or a key match incident wrong or whatever it might be. And I think it's the biggest thing for us was that staying focused for the full 90 minutes. It's whatever level you're refereeing at, you've got to keep that focus. Yes, there's times when you can relax it off a bit, but it's staying focused, staying in the zone, because at the end of the day, you're in charge of a game. Okay, that this was the biggest game of my career and the best one ever. And it's a case of I want to deliver it safely. And you hear me say that on a regular basis. It's about I want to deliver a game safely.
Yeah.
Was there a point in the game that you specifically remember, whether it be, oh, damn, I got that wrong, or, wow, that was a great decision I've just made, that you had going around in your head?
To be honest, Darren, it's just a case of I've seen the videos back and I've seen the clips back. I've seen Alex Bruce since, who committed the foul on the Santi Cazorla. Being stood behind or being stood in a position where Santi Cazorla bends that ball into the top right-hand corner as he did, that's one that sits in my memory bank because I clearly saw it going in because I said down the earpiece, that's in. I don't want to dwell on decisions in there that may be right or wrong. It was a case of, as long as we don't give a decision as a match-changing decision, i.e. a wrong penalty or whatever decisions you give, you just want to make sure that you just bring it to a safe conclusion.
That was a hell of a comeback of a game, mine as well, wasn't it? Let's be honest about it.
Well, I think those Arsenal fans, probably at 2-0, thought, oh my goodness, what on earth's happening? There's Hull, I think, we're either in the relegation zone or we're relegated. I can't remember now, but I'm sure there'll be lots of Arsenal fans that were pleased that they got back to 2-2. And then, of course, Ramsey scores the winner in extra time. So, and I'm sure maybe my mate, who could be a bit of a gooner, probably thinking the same line sitting in the stands.
I mean, for me, to summarise the day, I went to Wembley as an Arsenal fan. The fact that my mate was refereeing it did matter to me because if it had been, I don't know, Chelsea versus Burnley or Chelsea, two other different teams, it still didn't matter to me. The occasion was absolutely fantastic. And then I saw my mate doing all those things that you dream of doing when you're a little boy playing out in the rec after the cup final day. You've watched cup final all day long and you just live the dream. You just live the dream of one day that could be me if you're that little boy out in the rec playing football on a Saturday afternoon with two coats as goalposts. It's just amazing. It's the stuff of dreams, boys' dreams.
So, Lee, let's very quickly touch on the post-match feelings and, what happens after an FA Cup final. The game's done, you've collected medals, you go back. What are the next few days like for you as a referee?
Well, I remember Gary Lewin at the time, who had been looking after me through my injury, said, right, well, that's you done then. He said, we won't be seeing you again. I was like, oh, thanks, Gaz. And I said to him, could have done without extra time. And because it had gone to extra time, we normally go for a meal afterwards and all the teams just like relax and we go for a meal with David Ellery, Neil Barry and all of the girls and stuff. So that was great. So we went to Harrow School and it was getting late. And then consequently, with the extra time, we didn't expect 5:30 kickoff. We then go into Harrow and have a meal. And then, of course, back to the hotel, and everyone says, right, the time's your own. And, of course, then the game's gone rather well. Everyone's pleased, observers pleased, FA are very happy with how it's gone. So I let my hair down a little bit, had a few beers, and then had a few more. And then got to bed sometime, whenever it was, and then got up in the morning, drove home, and it was just like, I've just refereed the FA Cup final. Mm. And it was like, everyone was like, what's it like? And it's like, it's almost the same now, is that if I told you, it's like, I can't explain to you how I felt, it's just because it was such an occasion.
Surreal, I imagine.
Yeah, it's what dreams are made of.
Yeah.
And like I say, when I look back and all those things, when we started the podcast, however many weeks ago we've done this, if you'd have said to me when my dad was bashing on about taking a referee's exam that in 2014 I would be refereeing the FA Cup final, then I'd have said, Dad, don't be so daft. But at the end of the day, you do things that you've got to do. You've got to put performances in. You've got to have a little bit of luck. And I think you make your own luck because you either just sit back and go, do you know what, I've done enough, or do you go and do a little bit more, or do you just seek out a few? So I was quite lucky that when I look back at the team that I'd got around me, it was, I could turn to sort of anybody and go, what do you think about that? I need to work on my fitness. I can do someone with that. Mm-hmm. I can talk to Rich about stuff. Steve Bennett. I had lots of people at hand that I could turn to, and I think that's what is really, really good now, is that we've got so many opportunities for younger referees that I never had. That you've got, like I say, we've got a podcast here that we've got so many tips and stuff that people can get involved in. And I think once we get back onto to playing again, and we hope to get out of this lockdown, then I'm sure everyone will be enjoying sports as much as I did enjoying that cup final.
Lee, thank you so much for sharing with us your experiences over the last few episodes, and obviously because of your close relationship with Rich, I dare say at some point soon you're probably going to pop up again on the podcast, which is great. You're welcome whenever you like, mate. It's always great to get tips and experience and words of advice from somebody that has been there and done it. And now would be a good time to end with somebody like yourself just giving us a little bit of word of wisdom for any new referees that are just finding their feet, that have just found the podcast. What can you say to these referees?
I think the best thing I can tell them is that if you just got to go and enjoy everything you do. Refereeing is not everyone's cup of tea, but at the end of the day, it's without a referee, the game's aren't always played as well as they should be, and just stick in with it, because let me tell you, it and you keep going and you keep going, and wherever the journey takes you, it is the best thing ever.
Lee, just one more question before we go. I need to ask you about life after refereeing.
Okay, life after refereeing. Well, during lockdown, not a lot's been happening, but Rich and I have set up Par 4 Sports, as people know. As I said in the original podcast, I work with a lot of the Premier League teams, EFL teams. I've got the backing of Premier League, EFL and the LMA to offer venues for teams to be able to train for pre-season, winter breaks, when it's safe to do so, of course. COVID restrictions and stuff, it's a case of making sure it's essential to go. So I can't really see anybody doing too much in 2021. Unless we can get this vaccine into everybody and everyone stays safe and follows the guidelines, which is the most important thing. So we are looking at trying to do another referee and training camp in 2021, if it's safe to do so. As one of your guests said, that he came to St George's Park. We are going to look to either do another one at St George's Park or maybe another venue, which I'm conscious of costs and people not having football money spare. So I've got to look at venues that are reasonably costing that we can put another training camp on, like we did at St George's Park, for the next generation of young referees.
Lee, thank you so much for talking to us over the last few episodes.
Darren, it's been a pleasure. You know where I am if you need me. Well, if you don't, Richard does. but thanks very much for having us. It's been a great time just revisiting and talking about some positivity than the sad news that we're that we're experiencing at the moment. And I'm sure once football starts to get back and sports start to get back, and we'll all be enjoying running around a football pitch again.
Our special guest on the Referees World podcast over the last three episodes, which I hope you've enjoyed. Rich, it's been an absolute pleasure to finally get a hold of Lee, because we have been trying to nail him down for some time, but because of work commitments and so on and so forth, it's been a bit difficult, but we've got him, and there's still loads more that we can get out of him over the coming months, years.
Yeah, certainly is. There's lots of training ideas as well, and learning ideas. It's not just about what I know, what we share, you and me, but people like Lee have got so much to offer the next generation, and as Lee and I focus on Par 4 Sports, we actually call our project Next Generation, and that's what we like to focus on.
And you can hear a Next Generation podcast, see what I did there, by sharing it around and letting all your friends in the refereeing world know about the Referees World podcast, which you can listen to us online at refereesworld.co.uk, or just by doing a search on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts, that's where you'll find Referees World.
The download is complete.
This is Referees World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.